to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being with us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 14th of March in the year 2007. I wasn't on live last week, as those of you who listen obviously are aware. It was simply because I could not get out on my long distance. I just couldn't get through. And that had happened once before when Alan Watt was on as a guest with us, and he had to wind up doing the broadcast, but I had nobody to do it for me last week. So we're here with you live tonight, and it's 60 degrees. We had almost 6 weeks of weather that ranged from 0 to 20. We had a couple of days. One, it got up to almost 50. One, it got up to almost 40. But other than that, and this is absolutely delightful. I am so grateful to be able to even be barefoot in the house. Let me start here with our spiritual message, folks. This is from the Course in Miracles, from the workbook, page 65. It says, your passage through time and space is not at random. You cannot but be in the right place at the right time. And boy, it would help if we could remember that, wouldn't it? You cannot but be in the right place at the right time. Your passage through time and space is not at random. And our guest this evening, folks, is Robert Allen. Robert is a listener of Sweet Liberty, and he called me, and we have conversations quite often. And I asked Robert to come on with us this evening because of the work that he does. He's really beginning to discover, let's say, things that I wasn't even aware of that's going on in the educational arena. And Robert, I especially appreciate you giving your time tonight, because I know you're giving us an hour of your family time, which is your Wednesday night thing. And that's sweet of you to do this, and thank you for being here, honey.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, I would like, if you would, to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what it is you do, and how you have been able to discover the stuff that you were sharing with me that had me ask you to come on.
Sure. I actually work in... I work for a company that manufactures physical education games and equipment, small manufacturer based in California.
It's actually made in USA?
No, actually most of our stuff is made in China.
Oh, God. Okay.
But we do all the marketing and the sales here.
Okay, I see. Okay.
And we sell primarily to the education system, to both the public and the private sector. And we actually sell quite
keep
a bit.
Keep your voice up.
Sure,
thank you.
We actually sell quite a bit to both the public and the private school sectors, as well as the after-school programs, actually, and now the before-school programs, too, which are popping up. And so that's how I've come to sort of piece together some of what my ideas are on this topic. But the games are all geared at getting children active so that they can begin to remember that they have physical bodies and that they should be using them. So that's what we do.
And maybe part of it is to keep the their assets in good physical condition so that they can be taxpayers for a long time.
Sure.
I don't mean that to be facetious. I mean that very seriously.
No.
Because I heard she was Schroeder, Pat Schroeder. Oh, my goodness, her name came to my mind. Congressman Pat Schroeder.
Mm-hmm.
I do not recall what the what it was that was going on, but she made this statement on C-SPAN. She said, our children should not even be brought into this. She said, our children are our most valuable assets. And she said it isn't gas, it isn't gas or oil or whatever else, whatever she said. She said our children and our investment in them today will pay off, you know, for year after year after year.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Their investment.
You bet.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what it is. It's a cultivating system. You know, it's designed to, you know, to basically shape both, you know, psychologically, content-wise, and then also now physically. Because it wasn't a priority. That's what you and I started talking about, but it has not been a significant priority for a while now. And what caught my attention was the sort of increased awareness, and then, of course, all of the resources now that are aligning to help make it, you know, this national epidemic. When if you step back and look at it, it's been forming for 20 years or 30 years or longer.
What do you mean by that, hon? Mean that the children have not been physically active?
You bet. Yeah, as time has gone on, you know, technology has stepped in, and there's been, you know, a more of a gradual move towards everything being based off of what they call monitor time now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So you have children that are, you know, spending a lot more time in front of television, as my generation did after school. And then you have the computers that were introduced, and then those became the priority.
In other words, after school they don't run around and play ball and play tag and are physically active, but they're sitting in front of the with their computer games and things.
Exactly, and then the computer games, the video games that came out,
and
cell phones, and you know the PDAs and the iPods and all those things. Right?
And so now the schools are starting to address this, right?
Well, yeah. All of a sudden, it's become a huge issue. And all of a sudden, and in where I live in the state of California, lots of money is flowing from the state at the state government level to these programs, and the programs are covering everything from, you know, before and after care to the actual school system itself for both, you know, equipment and personnel to deal with this, and there's a lot of details or layers within that, but you know, the money was non-existent here in the state of California a few years ago. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of teachers unions and ads that were running television commercials against our governor here about what he had done with the budget and how the teachers were being left and the children were being left out. But now all of a sudden we're getting back on track in a big way. So
we have in the children's section at sweetliberty.org. There is an article titled "Are Your Children Human Capital?"
Mm-hmm.
And right below that is an executive order by Bill Clinton when he set up a committee to study capital, including human capital.
Mm-hmm.
And they were to report on the government's and other entities' use of capital, Robert,
mm-hmm.
and also on the depreciation of capital. And in the article, "Are Your Children Human Capital, what she found out, Cindy Weatherly, and for folks, any of you who haven't read it, if you have children or nieces, nephews, children that you love in your life, you would want to read this. But she found out that when they give assessment testing to the children in the schools, they are being assessed for their future production, their tax value.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, Robert.
Yeah, for their output, yeah.
So anybody who has a child that is in the public school or indoctrination system, their assessment testing is... And I really believe that what you're talking about here has a lot to do with keeping their human resources, their slaves, healthy. Do you?
Well, I think it's a sifting. I mean, what I mean by that is, you know, as the pace quickens, as they, you know, as their drumbeat quickens in terms of their plan and their timing,
mm-hmm.
they need to find ways to categorize people quicker and to get them either, you know, in the program or you know, classified as somebody who will not make the, you know, the next jump. So this is, I think, another plan for that, because a lot of what concerns me about this, or why, you know, it interests, it kind of caught my attention, was that, you know, most of the problems that are causing these health-related issues are given to us. You know, the food, the way it's designed,
yes,
the lack of activity, the, you know, constant, you know, barrage of misinformation about health and information, you know, then being in the education system and actually seeing the teachers, you know, they're nice people, but they don't even know.
You mean the teachers?
Yeah, they don't even know what they're doing. They really have no, you know, they're just being led around too. So they don't really, not all of them. I'm sure there's some people that are in the know and are doing what they're doing, but, and there are some great teachers who do know what's going on and have always, you know, tried to do the right thing, but for the most part, the teachers I've met, they just don't know. You know, they're just following what they're told, and they're being held accountable. And when you get down to the elementary level, which is kind of the scariest place, because that's the most formative time for a child, the teachers that are actually responsible for the physical education component of their education at that level, they only take one class in their entire credential that deals with physical education. And they just don't know it. You know, they just don't have any idea about how to go out and organize a class and what should be being taught against the standards. What are the standards state by state?
I don't think they really have a choice of what they're teaching, do they?
No, they don't. And then that's the other part of this, is you add in, you know, the No Child Left Behind program, which is, you know, highly accountable. You know, for the teachers are each held highly accountable for their test results. It creates such a pressure that they have to actually, you know, spend extra time preparing the children for the test, which then cuts into their minimum minutes that they have to be teaching PE. And let's be honest, the minimum minutes are ridiculous too.
But
a lot of them were established a long, long time.
I don't know that ever any of the academic teachers were teaching PE. I mean, we had our classes, and this goes way back, but we had our classes and we had PE.
The
gym, we called it gym, you know, at the time.
That's
but
true, typically junior high school through high school. You do have an assigned PE teacher and an assigned PE period. What they've done in the elementary level is they've made that the responsibility of the general teacher.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, yes.
Oh, well, see, when I was in school, we had gym.
Yeah.
We had a coach. In fact, we had to call him coach when I was in elementary school. And I did not realize that wasn't part of the curriculum anymore, or part of the, you know, the whole system.
Well, it's part of the curriculum, but there's like, what's happening with the new sort of organizational move is they have what are called PE specialists at the elementary level. So, but they'll put one PE specialist for every so many schools sometimes. So you have one guy who shows up, or gal, excuse me, and shows up and is to teach two or three or four classes at a time. You know, and so how, you know, in those situations,
okay,
how do you monitor and teach what, you know, what the content is? And how do you even do that? It's just basically you're getting everybody active and moving, hoping that they
Doesn't it make you wonder, as you said, this whole thing has been part of the plan to have the children become inactive, and the obesity that so many young children have a problem with today because of the food, the high fructose corn syrup that's in almost everything that you buy in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And
all the processed foods.
Yeah, the processed foods, right. And now they're making a big deal of it.
Yeah, but now it's an issue.
Yeah, now it's become like an epidemic, I guess. You've attended some seminars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what we were talking about the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things you told me were really shocking, and can you recall what we were talking about to share with our listeners?
Sure,
there a place you want to start?
Sure. Well, nationally there are what they call components that become what are standards state by state for physical education, what the teacher should be teaching and what the student should be learning. And so every state does a variation of that. Some states have, you know, five excuse me, standards. Some have 10. You know, it just depends on what emphasis they want to place on that part of their curriculum.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, where I'm at in California, we have 5 standards. And those standards are in the process. We actually had new legislation that was passed and is actually about to kick in here in June of this year. through a Senate bill that appropriates extra money towards physical education equipment and more specifically what they call professional development, which is the retooling of the teachers and what they're going to be teaching.
Retooling.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they call it that?
Well, they don't call it that. They call it professional development.
Okay.
That's what it is anytime they make an amendment to the
Just given it.
So the teachers, you know, I was sitting in a conference with a bunch of teachers that were sitting there getting sort of the lowdown on what was coming down the pipe, because there's a lot of confusion, you know, because you have the state, and then you have, actually you have the national, and then the state, the state education department, or department of education, then dictates to the local level at the district level, and then the districts give the information to the schools. Well, there's a lot of, it's like a game of telephone, you know that game where you would start by one saying one thing, and then by the time it got to the other end, it was something entirely different.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of misinformation. So the local here in California, the California Department of Education, has put together a series of seminars for the teachers to basically go through and be, you know, brought up to speed on what's going on. And so I was in one of those sessions and was just hearing about the re-emphasis of Well, first off, that there's this new, as part of this new Senate bill that was passed here, Senate Bill 78, all entering freshmen in the high schools next year will be tested physically, and those test results will determine whether they have to take 2 or 4 years of mandatory PE. If you don't pass, you're in the automatic 4-year phase.
And they take that again?
So if you don't pass the fit test, you're going to have 4 years of PE without any, I mean, that's it, you're taking 4 years of
PE. No ifs, ands, and buts. I think it should, I mean, that just seems reasonable anyway, that they should have PE.
Right, exactly. Well, you should be getting physical activity, so.
Yeah.
I do think that they are looking at a clause where they can retest in their sophomore year, so I believe that's underway. But so, whereas when I went to high school or anybody else, the California state system, you had 2 years, and then the rest of it is up to you. You could do what you want with that.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the first step towards that. But what was going on, what was really interesting, was the content shift. There's 8 areas that that need to be addressed in a specific curriculum, and there are things like, the effects of physical activity upon dynamic health, whatever that means, basically,
yeah,
what you do and how it affects you physically, mechanics of body movement, which is a big priority of theirs.
Mechanics of body movement.
Exactly, understanding how the body moves, what causes it to move certain ways, why certain body types and structures are more efficient, and what is efficient, you know. Aquatics, which I thought was kind of interesting, because some facilities don't even have pools, but they're going to teach, you know, some content on aquatics. Gymnastics and tumbling is another one. Individual and dual sports. And then the big one, there's a couple other ones, but team sports, you know, rhythms and dance. But the big one that caught my attention was the combatives. But I, you know...
The what?
It's entitled combative.
Combative.
Yes. So teaching basically the art of fighting or combat. So that, and it's never been called that before. Now, if we back up to what was in the system, you know, before, you did have the presidential physical fitness test, which was definitely geared at preparing students for like a military boot camp type environment where you're doing the pull-ups and, you know, the curl-ups.
Uh-huh.
And all that stuff. And a lot of those same activities are in the revised test, the physical test. But it's never really been called a combative.
And they call it combative.
Yeah, that's the word.
They're programming them, getting ready for war, aren't they, Robert?
Well, yeah, and then when you take that and you sort of marry that with, I believe, and I may not be exactly accurate on this, but I think in the last year or two, the entering freshman class of whatever class that was, whether it was 2005 or 2006, was the largest freshman class entering high school ever. So you had, you know, the largest groups of people coming in.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Then, you know, you kind of look at that. Then you couple
with
what we're doing in other places in the world militarily. You know, that seems like a pretty obvious correlation. And then There's a bunch of other factors.
Now, is this nationwide?
I'm just kind of referring to what my situation is.
But I'm talking about, you said that this was the largest freshman class.
Yes, I believe nationally.
That's what I wanted to know. Is this on a net? How do they account for that? I mean, what do they have any statistics that say why suddenly?
Why suddenly they're going to make a change?
No, why suddenly the largest group of children entering freshman year?
It's just data that they have, and if you look at, you know, if you look at, like, marketing resources, that generation that I'm referring to is called Generation Y.
Generation Y?
Yeah, like the letter Y. And there's a lot of data on it out there that's available if you just...
We were talking about, remember, Generation X?
Exactly.
The X generation?
Exactly.
Now they have a Y generation?
They have a Y generation.
And what is the Y generation?
It's younger. Obviously it's younger, but it's the next version after Generation X.
God, I wonder what that means, Robert.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some...
There's something. It means something to them.
You bet.
We talked about this.
Well, you remember Generation X would be, you know, X would be the unknown factor.
The unknown factor, yeah.
Both the one and the zero, because it's 10, so... as far as why, I'm not really clear.
Okay.
But so that's the generation, and that's the one that will be most affected by this. And I'm sure generations after too, or the tail end of this Y generation will be feeling effects.
Well, the last letter in our alphabet is Z.
Yes, that's interesting, huh?
Yeah.
That is interesting. So you take all of this sort of information, you start thinking about it a little bit, and I was thinking, this is just interesting timing for all of this, and then I started just looking into, you know, who is doing the testing, who's the assessment company, what's their background, you know, and just, you start looking at all this stuff, and it's pretty interesting, there's people that are involved in a lot of this.
You have children?
Yes, I do.
What are their ages?
I have a son who is 20 years old.
Oh, they're adults.
And then I have twin daughters who are 10.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are they in public school?
They are.
Oh, does it frighten you?
You bet, of course.
Is there any way you can get them out of public school?
Yeah, we actually are looking into all of those options. We've been obviously doing it with a greater urgency in the last 6 months or so, but yeah.
How long have you been with this company that you've been beginning to see this stuff that you've been noticing?
For a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah. And before that, I mentioned to you that, you know, I was in marketing. That was my background. I was doing event marketing, so I got to see a little bit about or learn quite a bit about at an event level a lot of the stuff that occurs in terms of data capture.
I don't know. I'm not following you. An event data capture, that means nothing to me.
Well, that's like when you go to an event, like let's say you go to a consumer event out there, like the Super Bowl as an example, and then there's major brands that spend money to be their sponsors.
Oh, okay.
They hire companies to basically do as much as they can to capture information on the people that are attending that event and then have opportunities.
What was the seminar that you were in, or you were talking to somebody? I wish I could recall our conversation. That's the problem with having conversations and then trying to redo it. Oh, it had to do something with the schedule of the teacher. Like the teacher could not smile at the class until December.
I was actually at another event this week, and there was a speaker on the stage who was an accomplished teacher, had won Teacher of the Year in a couple states, because she had worked in two different states. But she was just giving examples of stereotypical ways or paradigms or ways that teachers do and think about what they do with teachers. And so she gave an example. She said, you finished the sentence. And she said, on the stage, she said, teachers don't smile before. And then she was silent. And the whole audience said, December. Meaning that you know, as part of their training, they're not supposed to smile before December because that would mean that they're nice to the children, and the children, they would somehow lose control of the child. So it's, but it's funny, most all the teachers in the audience were able to finish that statement, and I remember just kind of scratching my head thinking, that's interesting.
See, to me, it's beyond interesting. It's very upsetting, disturbing.
Well, it's disturbing, and it's disturbing because they all know it, or most of them know it, and that they think that's normal. So that's what's disturbing.
And they're all little robots, those teachers. No, let me undo that. They aren't all robots. I received an email from a teacher one night when Alan was on, and we were talking about the educational system, and I think we were painting them all with the same big broad brush.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote to me and she said, I am not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she took exception to it, which I understand. But I don't know how a teacher can stay in teaching if they're not following all of the laid out, the smiling before you. That's so pathetically set.
Well, you know, that's actually
you can't even be yourself to be a teacher if you're not allowed to smile before December.
Right. Well, that was her point, and that was actually, you know, she had won Teacher of the Year a couple times, and I think that was her point in her conversation, is that, you know, there's a lot of belief systems within teaching that you don't have to follow, and so that's inspiring. I thought that was a great, you know, I thought that was a hopeful message that she had the rest of her talk, but the fact that she brought that out as an example and all the teachers knew it, I thought it was very interesting.
And they all knew it.
Well, the other thing that they're not really even talking about yet either is what's going on now in the next part of the No Child Left Behind legislation, which is...
Robert?
Yes?
You do talk fast. It seems like you're talking faster tonight than you normally talk when we talk.
Okay?
And I'm following you, and I want to make sure that our listeners are able to follow. I don't know if you can slow down just a little bit, honey.
I can definitely slow
down. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So the part that was interesting about the last piece of all of the standardized teaching ideology is the actual screening and monitoring of the teachers. So
explain that.
So now, you know, we've been screening as part of the No Child Left Behind program. We have 5 years of data on that now.
Okay.
And from the children, and from what the effects of it have been. And now what they'd like to implement as the final part is the actual accountability portion of it for the teachers. So, meaning if the teachers don't bring their students to a certain level of success, that then they are now on the bubble. And that is actually part of what they introduced for the PE component of it as well, is that the next step is assessment of the students and then assessment of the PE teachers. So it's the same program as what's happening in regular education. It's just, like I said, PE is like the last
right.
Or another component.
Right.
And so,
you know what I'd like to do? We're in about 60 seconds. We're going to have to take our 3-minute break here.
Sure.
When we get back, I know this sounds ridiculous, but I'm not really clear how they're implementing this No Child Left Behind thing.
Mm-hmm.
And would you be able to explain this?
In a very broad sense, I don't know all of the dynamics of the test itself, or the tests themselves, but I understand the concept.
Basically, when they say no child left behind, what they're really meaning is there's no child that's going to escape our net, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
well, the shifting will occur.
Or ship, or what?
Well, the shifting will occur, and only the ones that are qualified will make it.
Uh-huh. All right, well, folks, we'll be right back. Well, in about...
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded,
It has been borrowed. It has been purchased. It has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Of people. All right, folks. Yes, we're back. Okay, Robert Allen is our guest. Robert and I were having a private conversation here about our egos, telling secrets on us. Can you, if, you know, at least in a broad way, I don't know why I haven't delved into this more, because usually my curiosity makes me want to understand everything. Mm-hmm. And I guess basically I have the broad view of it, that no child is going to be out of their neck, but I'm intrigued on how they're implementing it. Do you have any awareness or knowledge about that, Robert?
It's mostly mostly testing, followed up by results and analyzation of those results, and then what they call intervention.
Okay, intervention. You mean like if they don't answer the questions right?
Right.
Then they remediate them until the next time they're tested.
Exactly.
They answer it correctly.
Yes.
Politically correctly.
Mm-hmm. And you know, if you go to edcd.gov, which is the U.S. Department of Education, they have their overview of No Child Left Behind, and their general description of it. This is their description. It says, President Bush signed the No Child Left Behind Act on January 8, 2002. The law helps schools improve by focusing on accountability for results, freedom for states and communities, proven educational methods, and choices for parents.
Oh, so right.
So that's their description.
And what we can do is, as we hear each one of those,
yeah,
think the opposite.
Well, or you can understand the double speak behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they want us to adopt their educational methodologies. But so that's the idea. And now there's a new piece that's being added, and there's obviously some revisions that people want to make to the law because it is a law. And so in order to do that, they brought in some of the think tanks. I was just clicking around, and I was reading all of the people that were involved in it. And involved in the revision of what they'd like to do to this law.
Okay.
And I first heard about it because I was at a conference, and some of the teachers were saying that now, unless they meet requirements, they actually fall into a new bracket, and if they can't get all of their students to a, I think it's 75 percentile within that, within the success ratio that they give them, they will be either fired or an intervention will occur.
With the teacher.
The teacher.
They'll intervene with the teacher.
Exactly. So, and that means that, you know, that's again another way to retool as a form of professional development.
Of course.
So, and you know. So
well, you know, the one thing we do want to remember is that they've lowered the standards so drastically, Robert,
mm-hmm.
that that's part of No Child Left Behind, I would bet anything. Because remember when they stopped giving A, B, C's, and D's, and
mm-hmm.
and they passed or they failed, but they didn't want any child in the class to feel bad if they got a D and someone else got an A.
Mm-hmm.
And then they began dropping the standards. So now they also will take a bright child and put them in an advanced class.
Exactly.
Those are the ones that are in real danger.
Exactly.
Real danger, because they're going to start really brainwashing them.
Yes.
Because they show such promise
mm-hmm.
to be a future citizen of the universe, of the world. What do they call it? A world citizen.
Exactly.
That, right. That's their term, I think.
It is.
A world citizen.
So, and so, you know, just like with, you know, the No Child Left Behind, and there was a series of assessments that were created grade by grade, the same thing is happening now for PE, and that's what this is called. It's a national, basically standardized test called the Fitness Gram, and it measures not only, you know, the activity that somebody's doing now, but then their wellness. So what we're going to start doing is start getting data on body type, you know, the percentage of fat on the individual, their BMI, you know, basically.
So you could actually fail PE.
Yeah, well, you could fail. Actually, what's going to happen, which is going to be interesting, and I'm not sure how they're going to deal with this, but they're going to have a backlog. And they haven't, here's the other part, is they have not defined passing yet.
They haven't defined a passing?
Yeah, they haven't defined what a passing
grade or level. Uh-huh.
So imagine, you know, if there's six components. I imagine if you were six out of six, then you would pass. But I think based on current data from the Fitness Gram, about half the students can't meet that.
I wonder what about the child that is very, not strong,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't have good natural reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what their deal is. Let's say that child would probably be one that wouldn't be a passer.
Yeah.
I wonder if they would reassess them as far as their future tax, you know,
sure.
Value.
You bet. Mm-hmm.
And that they, I know that I'm getting us a little bit off track here, but I know that I'm really not. Hold on, please. Molly, lay down. Lay yourself down right now. I'm sorry, honey. She's up here in my face. I remember this is when I talked to Cindy Weatherly, and when I got her article on Are Your Children Human Capital,
mm-hmm.
Chuck had brought home a newspaper article, and that the World Bank had changed their system of loaning money, and that each nation that that they loaned money to, the nation had to present to them a balance sheet, a financial statement. And when I read that, I said, you know what, Chuck? I'll bet you any amount of money that we are part of that financial statement, you know, like on the asset side.
Mm-hmm.
And Cindy Weatherly happened to call me for something. She and I were talking, and I mentioned that to her. She said, "Oh, Jackie, you're right." Mm-hmm. She said, "Haven't you?" She actually titled her article, "The Emperor's Clothes," or "The Emperor Has It," something like that. And when I posted it, it's posted in the children's section as "Are Your Children Human Capital?" But that is absolutely that the assessment tests that the children are being given in school, assessing them for their future tax value, are going onto the government's financial statement as an asset, depending upon what their future tax value is assessed out at. This is sick,
mm-hmm.
Robert. It is really sick.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you own the system, you got to understand what you've got. So, and that's what they're doing, and that's unfortunate. It is disgusting. And there's other things, other parts of this too. If you look at for example, the company that produces the fitness gram. It's a company out of Texas called the Cooper Institute. And
out of where?
Out of Texas, out of Dallas, Texas.
Cooper Institute. What is that?
They're an institute, a think tank kind of, that develops information around physical education. Their founder wrote a book on aerobics in 1968.
Kenneth Cooper.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got his book on aerobics.
Exactly. So, and his specialty or background forever has been, he works for the military.
Oh man, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he develops the curriculum for the boot camps and helps to create the assessments for them for incoming soldiers. So that's his connection, or that's their connection to another company that actually writes and puts together the fitness gram assessment, which is the test that will be given. So that's the military aspect of it.
Okay, the military. Thank you. We're getting back to the combative. Robert, did they talk about this program, what they called combative? I mean, is there more to it than just that they've got a new program and it's called?
They've always had the same program. I think that they just have rephrased it now, and they've put a new word to it, a new way of categorizing it.
Well, what are they teaching in this thing?
Well, in combative, the breakout for combative, within each section they have to meet the standards, and so the standards are, kind of what I was reading before, strength and muscle flexibility, cardiovascular endurance.
They just call it combative.
Well, that's just one segment, yeah.
Part of the programming.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and one of the questions that came from the office, or from the floor, that day when I was in that one seminar was, they were asking if they could bring in, military personnel and stuff to demonstrate and talk, and the answer was yeah.
These are elementary children.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So.
Did you see the movie, the original movie, Rollerball?
Yeah.
Well, do you know, this is when I wasn't awake, but I actually noticed this. In that movie, they had those big, huge TV screens everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that on the TV screens, all you saw was wars. People in military uniforms, tanks, guns. And I remember remarking on it, but of course, I just didn't know enough to, relate it. But look how far back they've been programming.
Well, forever. Yeah.
And I get emails, lots of emails. But for example, one soldier. Well, in fact, I think that they said that they were investigating these soldiers, but they went into a home and they literally mowed down a family with five children, the mother, the father, one of the grandparents, And it was because they, excuse the language, they said they were pissed off because one of their buddies got killed.
Yep.
And they just went in. This is Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people, you know, they call them insurgents.
Right.
The people that are trying to defend their families and their country. And when you watch it on the news, they're insurgents or rebels. But these people are killing with no compunction, with no nothing.
Well, that is their conditioning, and it is, in a lot of senses, a new military, and I'm sure all of the latest sciences are being deployed. But I told you about the time I met this gentleman on a run who was being redeployed to Iraq, and he was an officer who had been working in the private sector since he graduated, or got out of the Corps and went to work for a pharmaceutical company in Pennsylvania, I believe.
You're talking fast again, hon.
Oh, sorry. So he had been out of the Marine Corps for probably 20 years and was, after 9/11, decided to re-enlist.
To serve his country.
To serve his country.
To go kill Iraqis.
Well, he wanted to he specifically mentioned he wanted to lead by example for his children, that you stand up for what you believe in. But what he disclosed to me during the time we spent together, which was only an afternoon, we were running together somewhere, and he said to me, "It's a new Marine Corps, Robert." He said, "It is not anything like when I was in it." Now, of course, time changes people and their perspectives, but he said it's frightening. He said there is no respect. There is no it's borderline aggression towards the officers. And he was, you know, it was almost as if he was saying, "I'm afraid to go there."
Well, wait a minute, though. No respect to the officers.
Yeah. So
in other words, he was still in his brainwashed condition.
Sure.
That you obey the officers and you just follow orders.
Well,
and do you think that what he was saying could have been, I mean, maybe something positive, that there's a number of them over there that see what's going on and saying, "I'm not going to do it"?
Well, he was more describing a scenario where there was so much anger and aggression in them that they would be more likely to kill anything that they didn't agree with, or
even an officer.
Even an officer.
Oh, okay.
So
they're just going to kill.
Yeah, exactly. And he says, and that, you know, he says that's part of their training. So.
Well, you know, all I can say is this, and I know I said this, you know, I guess we've covered every topic, just about every topic that can be covered on Sweet Liberty over the years. And I know that we have a lot of new listeners that haven't heard not even an nth of what we've done. You know, actually beginning back in 1995, it's been 12 years. But anybody who's listening right now and who has a child in school, I would say that even if you have to sell your second or third car, even if you have to cut up your credit cards, whatever you have to do to be able to bring those children. The reason I'm saying this is that I talked to a beautiful lady here in Pennsylvania. She's the woman that sent me the book, The Giver. Robert,
oh, yeah.
Did you ever read the book?
No, I didn't read it, but I remember you mentioning it.
I read it to our listeners.
Okay.
It's a child's version of George Orwell, but in that book, they literally describe, this is recommended reading for fifth graders,
yeah.
And it won the Newbery Medal of Literature for Young Children,
mm-hmm.
That in this world, that this book was laid out in, like, Orwell's 1984,
mm-hmm.
There could be no two people alike, nobody could have the same name, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And the one, there were twins born, and in the book, you know, there was a particular family that was featured,
mm-hmm.
And Jonas was asking his father, who was a nurturer at the birthing center, because women didn't have babies. They had birthing women.
Sure.
Okay? Anyway, he said that they had twins, or somebody was going to have twins, and that, you know, of course, that's not okay. And Jonas asked him, he says, well, what do you do, Dad, with the other one? He said, oh, we just send them elsewhere. Well, Jonas got a chance to see the video of it because he was going to be the new giver, the receiver. He was the receiver. And he watched his father. This was defined. This was... He weighed the babies when they were born. This is in a book for fifth graders. He weighed the babies when they were born. Okay, little guy, you're going elsewhere. And they wrapped the one that they were going to keep up, and he walked over to the cupboard, and Jonas watched him take out this great big syringe, the needle. Ooh, he cringed. He says, oh, but all children have to be vaccinated. And he watched the father as the father stuck the needle into the soft spot of the baby's head and injected the stuff. The baby flipped and flopped and then went dead. And the father put it in a box and threw it down the trash hole. This is a book for little children.
Right. Sure.
Well, and what I'm saying, well, the woman that called me, she took her little girl out of school. The little girl came home very upset at lunchtime. And the mother went, she asked her about it. She went and got the book. She took her child out of school. And they pinched pennies. I mean, they gave up their second car. She gave up her job. And what I'm saying is this, Robert, and I know I sound like I'm preaching, but anybody who has a child, and that child has been brought into your life to protect and defend, and you have any absolute possibility, no matter how hard it could be, of getting that child out of the clutches of that damn system, and if you don't do it, I wonder, Robert, I wonder what if a person knows and lets it happen to their, and they think their child is going to be safe. No child is safe. No child will be left behind. What happens to the soul of that parent who doesn't do everything in their power to protect that child? I really wonder about that. I do wonder about it.
Well, I think that's a great point. I also think that, you know, the system accommodates for the distractions around the parents. And there's no excuse making here, but what I'm saying is, you know, when you are in the system, per se, and you have to, you know, provide for your family too.
Do we have to provide? That's the whole point.
Well, that's
you know, all the new
fangled
toys, and every child has to have a cell phone that can give them brain tumors, and you know, get them all the latest little things for their, you know, the television to play the games to keep the children occupied, so the parent doesn't have to spend time with them.
No, exactly right. Exactly right.
That I'm only talking, you know, to the people that are listening to this broadcast, because there are so many people that just don't know. But see, to me, once you hear it and you know it and you don't do something about it. Now, I think about single parents, especially single moms,
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, of course, single dads, too, I guess. I guess there's more single moms, but sometimes there's just, they just can't find a way because they have to work. But if there's two parents, Robert, and that child, and the parent knows it, and that child is in that system, because their child will not escape.
No.
They will not escape. I told you about my friend, who her children went to a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, brainwashed religion, but she had them really aware, and she felt very safe, you know, because they'd come home and say, you know what they said today in school, Mom? Because they heard it.
Right.
She was teaching them.
Right.
And her daughter went to college. And before the half of the freshman year, she called me up crying. And she said, I can't believe this. I've lost her. And her daughter literally said to her, you don't know me anymore, Mom. I'm different.
Right.
I said,
well, and that's the deal is that, you know, I was mentioning to you, I've been rereading Brave New World, Aldous Huxley's book, and he talks about where they actually make the children and condition them in those environments before they send them out for their purpose. And then you compare that with Bertrand Russell's The Impact of Science on Society, and where he basically said that they don't even need to do that anymore. All they need to do is just get a hold of the children prior to...
Yeah, Bertrand Russell, I've got his statement that if we can have the children, that in one generation, that's all it's going to take. And anybody listening to this, folks, any one of you who have children, I don't care what grade they're in, it is never too late to pull them out and to start informing them and helping them to come out of it, at least so that they can see it. And sometimes you feel like you're living in a parallel universe. Sometimes you feel that you're living on a planetary insane asylum. But to know, we have got to know so that we don't, that we, well, you know what I think about? That in the Bible, you know where Jesus said, fear not those who can kill the body, but not the soul.
Mm-hmm.
But fear those who can kill the body and the soul.
Yeah.
And that,
sure. It's a reclassification, a reprogramming that's happening, and it's not only happening to the students, but it's also happening to the teachers and to.
Yes.
Anybody in and around the system.
Remember that article I mentioned to you that's in the children's section, sweetliberty.org? It was 19, it might have been 73, it was in the 70s. It was from an Indiana newspaper that teachers were taught to be agents of change.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked, I think it was Charlotte Iserbeat, why would they come out so blatantly? And folks, if you haven't been in the children's section, you have children, get in there and read some of that stuff. Read that article. You know what Charlotte said? She said they test the waters, because they said it very loud and clear in that article. But she said there was a tremendous outcry when that article appeared in the paper, and they pulled in their horns.
Yeah.
And they
do it.
Yeah,
that's how they figure out how to handle the blowback. So
yes,
it makes sense.
We've just heard our little signal that we're. Robert, if any of our listeners would like to contact you, if you know they have any questions or maybe information that maybe you could provide them, would you be willing to give your email address, honey?
Sure, that's fine. My email address is, and I'll spell it for everybody, but it's Syntropy Solutions, and it's Syntropy, and the word solutions. @yahoo.com.
Thank you, Robert. You're
welcome.
And thank you for being on with us.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, we'll be back next Wednesday night. And I hope you're listening and thinking about what you're doing tonight. Good night, Robert.
Good night, Jackie.
Your area has just unexpectedly flooded. The power's out, so is the water, and you are thirsty. But wait, outside, look, there's lots of water, and then you see it.
Oh my gosh! What is that floating in the water? And what is that odor?
No problem. You thought ahead and own a Berkey water purification system. Berkey has revolutionized the way water is purified simply.